it for now. I'm gonna let you know what I'm feeling now. I must be quite emphatical. I'm feeling plain ecstatical. I might just float right up to the ceiling. The joy inside me, the smile you see, is for one reason alone. The time and place where I wanna be is holy hot damn, right where I am now. The past is too historical now. Future needs an oracle now. Is when you feel euphoric. Trust me, your crowning achievement, your greatest prize, will come on the day that you realize the moment you're living for. Wow, is now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Britt Elders. I'm sitting in for Shirley, who's on the East Coast this weekend, where she's been honored at the Virginia Film Festival, and she's also working on putting together some new projects. My guest this week is a dear friend of Shirley's and of mine, Dr. Georgina Cannon. She's been a frequent guest on IE Radio and in the chat room, and as you may know, Georgina is an award-winning, board-certified clinical hypnotist, and she's a lecturer at the University of Toronto. She is recognized as the public face of hypnosis in Canada and is a respected member of the mainstream health community. That's really important because mainstream health normally does not accept hypnosis as a key in treatment. She has educated psychiatrists, physicians, nurses, and social workers in the healing powers of hypnosis and regression work. Now, she's got a new book out. It's called The Third Circle Protocol, and it's all about relationships. With the holidays approaching and relatives and friends appearing in our lives more frequently, we thought this would be an ideal time to open the discussion on this topic. Georgina, welcome, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you so much. I had to giggle when you said that last piece. Everybody sort of tightens up when they know they've got to go to family dinners and lunches.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, let's begin by explaining what the Third Circle Protocol is, because when you first hear it, you think, oh, man, is this a spy mystery? What is this? It is a mystery.
It is a mystery.
But explain to us what you mean.
Sure. It's a new way of interacting with others. Actually, it's not the protocol itself that's new. It's the understanding of it, because like it or not, we are always in relationships, and
right.
Whether we go to the supermarket and we, you know, check in with the cashier, that's a form of relationship. And mm-hmm. everywhere we go and everybody we connect with, including, I believe, nature and animals, it's all forming a relationship. And at mm-hmm. one time, we had one point of view of the relationship, that we would be taken care of by someone, either government or husband or wife or employer, and then we expanded that to believe that we are coexisting in a relationship, so we overlap. This new protocol talks about it being a contract, an unspoken contract, so that both of you are feeding into this relationship. It's the third circle. It's like a living entity on its own. So mm-hmm. if you treat it with respect and you treat it with attention and are aware of it, then you help it grow and it flourishes. If you don't, then it diminishes.
How did you come up with this concept?
I had a client who came into the clinic now about 8 years ago, I guess, and he came in for some anger issues. And when I did a little digging and we did some discussion around where his anger was. It was mostly to do with the bookkeeper that was in the business that he'd just inherited from his parents. Now, the bookkeeper had known him since he was about 4 years old, mm-hmm. and she kept calling him Bobby, and everybody else called him Mr. or Robert or whatever. And when he had staff meetings, she would lean over and she'd say, "You know, dear, we're okay the way we are." And she'd pat him on the arm. And he'd get infuriated. He'd hold it back until he got her in the room by itself. And she kept saying, "But we are okay." And he didn't want to get rid of her because she had value. First of all, she had the history. And she was fine. She was good at what she did. It's just that they had taken snapshots of each other and she hadn't allowed him to grow up. So that brought to my attention how we see the relationship. Their relationship was stuck. So what he and I did was look at different ways of bringing the relationship up to date. And that's when the protocol developed. So we started off with the values. We started off with the priorities. And then we turned to what do you absolutely need in a relationship, your key five or six things. Bottom line, must. And of course, the first one for him was respect. Mm-hmm. And then what do you want? What is it you know, if you had a choice, you could choose to have? And then what are you prepared to give to it?
Right.
Most people don't think about that. And those things, those five stepping stones, if you like, create the core of the unspoken contract of the relationship that we don't talk about.
That's really important. I want to jump into that, but I'm going to start with a very general question that struck me as I was reading this book. And it's right towards the beginning of the book. And you ask a question that I think all of us ask ourselves at some point. I know there is no pat answer because we're all different, but your question was, what's normal? How do we, that's a really profound question when you start digging into it. How do we as individuals determine what is normal for each of us?
What is it that makes you feel comfortable in your skin? If you feel comfortable in your skin and you're not disturbing others, then that's normal. That's your normal.
Right.
So when people come into the clinic and they say, "You know, I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw this being at the end of my bed. Is that normal?"
Yeah.
And I say, "Well, for now, it's normal. And do you know who that being is? Do you have a sense of someone who recently died?" Or, and we go on to that type of questioning.
Mm-hmm.
Or does your home have a ghost in it or that you know of? Or has there been a major accident near your home? Because what's normal is what you're comfortable with. The minute you don't feel comfortable in your skin, that's when you start seeking and searching and discovering new ways of being.
That's an excellent answer. And I asked the question, even though it seems so simplistic, because it really isn't. And normal changes, doesn't it?
Totally.
We grow.
Totally. And I mean, ask anybody that lives near or in the pathway of an airport. Probably
right.
When they first move into that house, the noise drives them crazy. But after a few months, they don't even hear it anymore. It becomes the normal.
Right.
It's like fish in water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you've got a piece in the book that, and again, it's in the beginning, and we're going to get to other aspects of this incredible book. But you talk about life values, and you ask the people, the readers, to list life values. Now, why is it so important to recognize them? And is it important to recognize that these continually mature as we do?
Well, your life values are the platform on which you stand. They're your character. If you don't live your life values, your boundaries are very weak. So, for instance, if someone comes into the clinic and they say, "You know, I need to talk to you because I don't know what to do. I'm always being taken advantage of. I'm such a giver. Anybody wants anything, I give it to them. And, you know, I'm so generous. And And I say to them, actually, you're not generous. That's being quite selfish.
Very good.
And they sort of get a shock. And then we talk about values and why they're doing it. And if say, for instance, if one of their values is kindness and they're not being kind to themselves, then that's hollow. It doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just talk.
Mm-hmm.
If one of their values is to be respected, or respect is a value, and they don't respect themselves,
right?
Well, then nobody else is going to respect them.
Okay, so the first point where you have to really begin is in self-examination.
Oh, totally. The first
and
relationship.
You have to be that first circle in the third circle protocol, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you are, in fact, looking at yourself, your relationship with yourself, because you take yourself everywhere you go.
Right.
So when I have people coming into the clinic saying, how come I always choose losers? It's because they take themselves everywhere they go, and they don't really know who they are. So how can anybody else know who they are? My statement always is that we spend more time choosing a flavor of ice cream than we do a partner or a friend. Because
right.
We don't operate from a sense of values. We operate from a sense of I wanna.
Excellent point. And as our values change and we grow, we're developing our own truth. And you have a whole section in there about, and I thought this was just brilliant, the things your teachers told you that may or may not be true, how
right.
they apply to your life today, because
right.
we've all had, whether it's a educational form of teacher or someone in our lives we respect as a young person, their
mm-hmm.
words have carried over into our adult lives.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah. Hard work will bring you success. Not necessarily.
Right.
mm-hmm. And, you know, he's such a kind person, he gives everyone the shirt off his back. Well, that's not necessarily a good thing. It means he's shirtless.
And possibly freezing, right.
And possibly mm-hmm. freezing. Yeah, we have to be very careful about and really look at what we've learned that's become our norm.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah.
In our ability to care for others, and I've said this for a long time because I am one of those people that cares for others in a physical sense as
mm-hmm.
well as hopefully emotional support. But you have to take care of yourself. If you don't take care of yourself first, you're incapable. And as I read through your book, I think I understood that on a deeper context than
mm-hmm.
just the verbiage that goes with it and the understanding
right.
that's something that's necessary.
Right.
When you get into family, I mean, this was, wow. Yeah, because we have siblings, we have parents, aunts, uncles, we are parents, grandkids, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about the relationship that we need to be looking at and how it comes into the third circle protocol.
Because we've grown up in that, what I call the fishbowl of expectation with our relationships with our family, this is where most of the disharmony comes in, from the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be someone complaining about a mother who always complains that they never hear from them.
Right.
I'm guilty of that one. Or a sister or brother who is a bully and hasn't changed since childhood. Or, I don't know if you've noticed this, but when we go home for holidays, we all revert back to being a child.
Yes.
Right? And the parents, you know, start telling you what you should be doing, and mother is the martyr and father's the bully, or whatever it was when we were a child. And we all accept it, and brothers start tussling at the table, and like they're 8 years old.
Yeah, they regress, yes.
They regress because it's familiar and the environment is familiar. So we have to step into that adult part of us before we go and say, what are our values? What are my values? What are my priorities around this gathering? And start thinking about the priorities. And if the priorities are to emerge feeling good about the lunch or dinner or gathering, and to exchange laughter and feel unharmed by the event, then you decide what it is you're going to do toward that and how you're going to manage it. That's where you bring in your values, your priorities, your needs, absolute needs. So if you need to be heard, then you say, Uncle Charlie, I was just talking, as you lay your hand on his arm very kindly. And you make yourself heard.
Right.
Because that's part of your values and part of your need for relationships. And you rehearse it and you get good at it. And after a while, it becomes automatic because we're learning a new way of being. It's an awareness. It's a huge awareness of change.
Okay. What happens when it's not received well?
Well, you go back to your values. So if your values are kindness or humor, that's how you treat them. And we do really want people to take us the way we are. And yet
absolutely,
we're not prepared to take people the way they are.
So
if we understand that that's the way Uncle Charlie is, and I apologize if Uncle Charlie's listening out here, if that's the way he is, then why don't I just accept the way he is and not let it attach to me?
Right. I
you know
think
the old story about
not
having to go to every war you're invited to, right?
Yeah, we could miss a few of them. And so many times these issues are basically self-created because of a lack of awareness of where
totally
we
lack
stand.
Of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Totally lack of awareness. We go in with our buttons primed, knowing that, you know, Aunt Enid is going to be doing this and Mother's going to be doing that. And we have it all set up in our mind about what's going to happen. So our loins are girded, if you like. We're tight and
right,
ready for it. Instead of just going in with our values of kindness, awareness, the need to be heard, or whatever they are, laughter,
right,
and manage it from an adult point of view, not a child's point of view. That's the difference.
Well, you know, I really did not want to get into this quite so early into our discussion, but I think that goes to what we're seeing in the United States right now in this political climate where, and oh man, I can't imagine sitting down with some of the families I know because they're so divided.
So divided, yeah. One of the phrases that I teach my clients is that Uncle Charlie, I can see that from where you're sitting, it makes perfect sense. But from where I am, it doesn't make sense at all. But I can see that from where you're sitting and from your point of view, it makes sense to you. It just doesn't work for me.
You know, that's ideal because that opens up discussion.
It also validates him.
Right, right. Now, speaking of validation, you don't have to be so acquiescent about everything. You still have a right to maintain your values and your opinions, correct?
Totally. If one of your priorities and one of your values is to be heard, then you will make sure that you surround yourself with people of
right,
the same understanding. That's, you will choose friends that way. You will choose lovers that way. You can't always choose family that way, but you can certainly train them that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can say, my turn, you know?
Right.
And I can understand that you may not agree, and I can see that from your point of view, it probably doesn't make sense. But hear me, because this is my point of view. It doesn't have to be yours. It's mine.
Yeah, that's perfect. Okay, now let's get back to families and let's talk about sibling dynamics.
Oh, yes.
What do we do with these? I mean, anybody that has a brother or sister has them. And I'll be very honest. It took me over 50 years to get mine worked out with my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just so in its own way divisive, and in our own ways, what we did was recognize where it divided us, and we acted on that side of things, rather than looking for a uniform way to come together. Give me some thoughts there of how all of us can better our relationships with our siblings, because they are so important, especially to working things out from past lives, right?
Totally. And again, it's expectation. When we grow up in an environment, we take a snapshot of the person the way they were, and quite often they stay that way. But their snapshot and our snapshot is different. And I don't know if you've ever discussed with your siblings an event that happened, and they have a totally different perspective.
Yes,
of what
I
happened.
Have.
Yeah, I do it with my sister, and she says, I don't remember that. I remember this, you know, sort of thing. So one of the things to do is to really do this work with the sibling and find out what they want and need from this relationship. What do they want and need in this contract, in this third circle? And together you create the third circle of the relationship. And if they want and need to be heard, then know that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want and need to be heard, then let them know that. And it's an agreement. It's the unspoken contract spoken. So there's no unspoken expectations anymore. For instance, if one of the siblings, who happens to be a sister, says, I am sick and tired of always being the one organizing family gatherings and sending out everybody's birthday cards.
Right.
You're my brother. Why don't you do some of it? And he will probably say, I never even think about it. So, well, what can we do about that? So they make an agreement about what to do about that, because that's been a thorn in the side of one of my clients for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they make an agreement, and that's part of the agreement. And there are other things, like how they treat each other in front of people. He doesn't call her names that he called her when he's being... a bit of a bully. You know, he calls her like names that he called her at school and things like that.
Yeah.
So they've moved into adult and they've found it very different. Of course, it's not easy to keep it up, but they do a check every 6 months or so to make sure they're on target, because they want the relationship. They've decided they want this relationship to be thriving. They want it for their kids. They want the kids to see harmony. They want their kids to see excitement and looking forward to seeing their uncle or their aunt. So
right.
They decided that they're not going to have any unspoken expectations anymore. The contract will be written and signed and agreed to.
Very interesting. So the important thing is to initiate the change.
Initiate the change.
And then to work to maintain it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you say to a brother or you say to a sibling, there are some feelings that you have that are lying beneath the surface that we've never talked about.
Right.
And I don't know whether it's resentment to me or whether you just think something about me you don't like as an adult or something you remember. Can we get that out in the open? Because I'd like us to have a kind relationship. It doesn't have to be, you know, in each other's pockets, but it needs to be a kind relationship. That we respect and care for each other. And I would say 99 times out of 100, they'll say, sure. It sounds like one of your woo-woo things, and laugh and say, that's fine. But is it okay if we spend an hour and we work on it together?
Yeah.
And that's the beginning.
Well, I think that kind of takes us to spouses and partners, life partners. I mean, with the divorce rate as high as it is, it really does make me wonder if this is what we're failing to do, is to communicate and to set our boundaries and our goals as individuals and as a couple.
As a couple, as a relationship. One of the, I have a couple, because I do a lot of couples counseling these days. I had a couple come in about 6 months ago, and she sent him in because she was a client, but she sent her husband in because he wasn't romantic enough. So when he came in, I said to him, you know, so the complaint is that you're not romantic enough.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I don't know what else she wants. I buy her flowers every Friday night. And I bring them home. And what more does she want? And she looked at him and she literally said, screamed it. I don't want your damn flowers. I hate flowers. And you always bring me daisies. And I don't like daisies. And I don't like flowers. So I looked at them both in amazement. They've been married 8 years. And he bought her flowers every Friday night. And she never said a word. So I said, do you know what makes you feel loved? I said to the woman, if you don't like this, first of all, I said, why didn't you tell him? Well, I didn't want to hurt his feelings. So I said, okay, so this is an exercise you both have. I want you to write down 5 things, each of you, that make you feel loved.
Oh.
And just hand it to each other. There's no discussion, no negotiation, no saying, I already do that, or that's ridiculous, none of that. You just look at it, absorb it, and take it into that third circle.
Hmm.
That made
Did the relationship change?
Well, it made a huge change because it opened up the dialogue.
Right.
And they started saying thank you to each other. Because every time he brought home flowers, she got pissed and he didn't know what he'd done wrong.
I think that's so funny.
It is.
Well, but it's absolutely perfect because you have to define what it is you want.
That's right.
If you're not doing that in a relationship of any kind, you're not having a relationship, in my opinion.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and he's now doing much simpler things. That she, you know, pick up a chocolate bar on the way home because I know she likes this type of chocolate. She feels loved. That to her is romantic.
Right. Okay. Well,
send her a text, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It starts with the definition of what each of us as individuals think something equates to. And definitions are never the same.
Never
oh,
the
man.
Same.
That is That's funny. Right. Pick up a chocolate bar and I'll be happy.
Something,
I like that.
Yeah, something like that, right? And I have another couple and she gets up to work to go to work at 6:30 in the morning. He doesn't have to get up till 8 o'clock and it drives her crazy that he's still in bed while she's getting up and going to work. So she goes in and prods him. I said, wakes him up. So I said, well, why would you do that? Well, it makes me crazy that he's still sleeping and I go to work. So I said, well, at least kiss him goodbye. That's a nicer way of waking you up. I mean, sometimes I wonder who I'm listening to. I really do. These are adults.
Yeah, well, we all do things that are a little on the bizarre side. That's for certain.
But again, it's expectation. And again, they did the 5 things that make you feel loved. But it's expectations, and they're working right now on their contract because they need to know what each other needs from them and what the relationship needs. The other way this works brilliantly is when one of the couples travels a lot, and at one time people were concerned about, you know, having one night stands or playing around or having too much to drink or whatever.
Right.
And now it cuts it right back because they're not doing it to the other person, having to hide it from the other person. They're doing it to the relationship. And they know. And they know they've shrunk that relationship. Makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. But that's stepping up and taking responsibility for self and for actions, too.
Well, for something that you've helped create.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You've got equity in it, right?
You're supposed to.
Well, you've designed it. So
yeah.
Consciously designed it. This is not emotional. This is consciously designed it and agreed to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very good point. So with spouses, and since you're doing so many couples counseling things here, how often in relationships do people find they've spent, I don't know, 15, 20 years not communicating? Is it common, especially with empty nest syndrome and things like that?
Yeah, that's when it rears its ugly head. You know, I get people coming in saying, you know, my wife has changed, you know, since I got retired. She's not the same woman. go back to work. I usually say, well, everybody changes. You've probably changed since you've retired. If she hadn't changed, she'd still be wearing diapers and crawling on the floor. We all change. We all change. And we grow. And I will say that sometimes if people are having trouble in relationships and they do this work, they find out they're just not compatible.
Wow.
But at least they emerge from it knowing what they want and need.
And I would think they would emerge from it having a healthier opinion of the person that they're not compatible with.
Totally. Yes. And themselves. Yes, indeed. Yes.
Oh, this is something that anybody that's considering a separation of any kind should go through so that you don't end up being in a knockdown dragout. Wow.
Well, no question. And the other thing it works, other couples it works very well for are teens and parents.
Uh-huh.
Because it allows a teen to have feel empowered because they are part of creating the relationship. And they, therefore, have responsibility to maintaining it.
Excellent point, because I mean, looking at myself as a teen, of course, we all grow up thinking we're smarter than anybody else, but we hit a point in our life where we figure out that's not real. But if you could begin having very healthy dialogues with children and parents as to what is expected, as well as what their needs and wants are, it would make a huge difference, I would think.
Right.
Much happier homes.
Much happier homes. So if the teenager, for instance, says, I want, for my relationship with my mom, I want her to listen to me. She never listens to me. So I said, great. Okay, so that would be the one thing. The other thing might be I want in my relationship, I want to be treated like an adult. And I'd say, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like when you're treated like an adult? Well, you know, I'm allowed to come and go, blah, 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 blah. Well, there are some boundaries with everything, and that's discussed.
Right.
And the parent has to stop wagging the finger when the kid is doing this.
Yeah.
Because you have to allow the child to grow. It's part of their job to grow.
That's
part of their job is to push back. So if you're showing them how to do it with responsibility, it's terrific. So, for instance, with one teen and mother, in the book I talk it about, it's what the teen needed was love and caring, to be heard, freedom, and support. What she wants was laughter and friendship. And space to make mistakes. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? And what she's prepared to give is love and caring and promises kept. So she makes a promise she's going to keep it. And fun.
Right.
And what the mother wanted was love and respect and to be heard. Mother wanted fun and warmth. And she's prepared to give unconditional love and support, financial and emotional. So they came to that agreement, that contract. And because it was a teen, we checked it out every 3 months to make sure they were still on track.
There's something in here that I think was immensely important, and that's it's sort of a contract, a step-by-step process of forgiveness and creating a forgiveness ritual. And I think this goes into every relationship you have.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, beyond the spouse or the partner, the child, the siblings, anything, it goes into just looking at it and understanding it. Every aspect of someone from a professional relationship to a grocery store clerk about how they respond to you, how you respond to them, and forgiving and letting it go. This is very, very important because we're all holding on to garbage.
And it's so heavy. Garbage is so heavy.
It is.
And stinky. And unnecessary. And one of the things I say to my clients all the time is, are you living your story or are you living your life? Isn't it time to let go of the story and live your life? Or know that if you want to live your story, then let's make a story of it.
Right.
Choose how to change the end.
Right.
I give them what we call a double bind. Yeah, this is your story, so how are we going to change the end? We know the beginning, we know the middle, so how do we change the end of the story? If they don't want to leave their story, it's really quite funny. Some people don't.
Right.
So I try and find a way around it for them.
Yeah, in reading this, I've got to ask, does every aspect of this actually come down to self-respect?
Oh, totally. Totally. If you distill it down, absolutely. And if you respect yourself, then you respect others. Totally.
Yeah, because we all falter in that area every now and then. I mean, I don't think there's anyone out there that can completely say, oh, I respect every single thing I do. So what are some good tips to recognize when we are beginning to stumble a bit in that area, and how can we pull ourselves back into line?
One of the key things is when we start feeling resentful. The minute we start feeling resentful about something, we have forgotten ourselves. Now, this doesn't mean that we shouldn't give and we shouldn't, you know, be a kind person and support people and have to do, sometimes have to do things that we really don't want to do. Whether, you know, because like it or not, if we're supporting an older person who is difficult to deal with, although we want to be kind and we know that that's our role, we get resentful from it. And that's totally understandable. But we have to allow that with ourselves. So that, again, is self-respect and self-kindness.
Right.
Don't wallow in it, but just say, yeah, I know I resent it. Okay, so what? Let's get on with it, sort of thing.
Are you intentionally targeting me with this one? I'm dealing with Lee's 99-year-old mother, who is, she's taken cranky to a new level.
Oh, yeah, that's dementia, I think.
Yeah, it is. And I've gotten to the point in the last several months where I'm okay with it, but she lays this guilt on Lee. And how do you turn that loose, you know, as the oldest child and taking care of her and all of this? And it's, you're not doing enough. It's a constant thing. So you've got a great thing in here about in-law appreciation.
Yes.
And I made him go through it, and I said, she's not your in-law, she's your mother. Look at this. Go from there. It makes a wonderful point for, again, all relationships.
All relationships.
What you appreciate, okay, how they contribute to you, to your life, and what they did that represent their best qualities. And if you can keep those in mind, I think you've got it made.
The other thing is I never did, when I was dealing with some elders in my family, never did let the guilt thing happen, because I always said, what if someone said to me, you're not doing enough for me, Gina, and I'd say, well, what's enough? Tell me what you would like me to do. Otherwise,
we've done that.
You're always a loser. You never can satisfy.
Yeah, that's true. Well, she is a woman who right now at this space in life is not satisfied, because, and we know why, she's lost all the joys of life. She can't see, she can't hear, she's, you know, all the things that she's used to, and she's always been so active are now leaving.
She can't see and she can't,
we get that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I could keep going with so many aspects of this book, but I've gotta ask you right now, does the third circle protocol work within every relationship? Because you're taking one individual, another individual, and creating the third circle, correct?
Absolutely. And that works, it's the same as working with your lawyer, your personal trainer, your dentist, everybody.
Right.
Your medical doctor. So it's particularly with a medical doctor, you go in and you make sure that you are very comfortable in your skin, and you have you're ready. You're prepared. You've got the contract in your mind of what you want from that doctor, because they can be very dismissive if they think they can get away with it. Not all doctors, but many.
Right.
And you have to be very specific and very exact and go prepared. One of the complaints I had when I was writing this book about professionals is that the lawyers said people come without their papers. They come without information. They say, oh, I think it was about February. Well, that's not going to help me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's almost disrespectful of the relationship you have with that person. So when you go to your medical doctor, make sure you take all of your medical reports with you. Make sure you write down all of your questions so you don't get hustled out the door. And
right.
If you don't understand something, let them see you writing down the answer so it slows them down. You're in charge. You have
That's
to be
right.
honorable, have this third circle with yourself, and kind to yourself, remembering your values, as well as kind to the doctor. And
mm-hmm.
as you treat yourself with kindness and respect, they will feel it.
Yes. And I have a lot of various types of relationships with doctors across the country, and the big complaint that they have
mm-hmm.
is that people come in and they don't honestly tell them
right.
what they're feeling. They're one, probably, out of touch with their bodies,
yes.
out of touch with their emotional being, and
mm-hmm.
their spiritual side, and they
mm-hmm.
come in and they say, something's not right, fix it.
Right. That's why I'm saying go in with written questions, right?
You exactly.
have to
and yeah. know yeah. what you're feeling.
Know what you're feeling. Write it down.
Yeah.
Write it down. Not on your phone, because that doesn't help.
Yeah.
Write it down.
Where do priorities fall into all of this?
Priorities guide you on how you're going to live each and every day. If you're going, however old you are, we only have so many days. And
right.
I think priorities need to be written and rewritten every maybe 4 to 6 months
mm-hmm.
because that's what you focus on. And you can focus on, for instance, the harmonizing your family relationships over the next 6 months. That could be one mm-hmm. of your priorities. And
mm-hmm.
every day you would make a note about what you, or every week you'd make a note about what you're going to do toward that, whether it be
right.
meditation or actually reaching out to somebody or suggesting an event or whatever you're going to do. And if your priority might be about learning something new to keep yourself active, if we don't write it down, if we don't plan it, it doesn't happen. And suddenly another year has gone by.
Excellent
I don't know about you.
Point.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but if I don't write them down, if I don't prioritize them, nothing gets done.
Well, I have my daily list, and then I have a monthly list.
Yes.
My
yes.
daily list are the things that I have to accomplish throughout a day. My monthly list is about the things I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're on a list, I get them done.
Right.
But yes. if they're not, they get lost.
They get lost. They get lost in the maelstrom of thought, right?
That's right. And of finding abstract things to take their place that aren't necessary.
Right, right. You know, we make a pattern of doing certain things every day, whether it be brushing our teeth or getting dressed or whatever. We can add in patterns as well that really enrich our lives. So that's make them a priority, you know,
mm-hmm.
major goal in life or
mm-hmm.
whatever it is.
Yeah, and continue to change your goals, right?
Yes. Yes.
Increase them. Don't get stuck with, well, I achieved that, and then that's done, and there's nothing
yeah.
else.
No. That's why even at work, working with a boss that's not the most pleasant, you can bring this in. Or working with an employee that's not the most pleasant, you can bring this in.
Right.
And the different ways of being successful with these people who are not exactly your friend.
Yeah.
Friendly. Yeah.
Let's talk about friends, because the chapters in here on that are just, they're really wonderful. And you make a point that as we get older, it's not always easy to make friends. Mm-hmm. And what can we do about that? What can we, first of all, how do we view friendship? Is it an acquaintance? Is it something superficial that, oh, they're my friend, but you really don't know them? Or what do we do to learn what our definition of friendship is?
Well, I think when we were younger, we made friends at school, we made friends at work, we made friends because our boyfriends had friends and girlfriends, and we made friends differently. But as you get older, your world, I believe, gets smaller, even if you're working.
Mm-hmm.
You have less time to add on and build on, and the friends that you had move away or something happens to them. The other thing about it is when you were younger, these friends were very readily available. You know, they were always around one way or another. So now we have to decide what we want a friend to be. Do we want someone who's a buddy, a really close friend, maybe one or two who we can lean on and cry with and just chatter with and laugh with? Or do we want some friends that are social, that we can go to the movies with, the theater with, that we can go for a mm-hmm. walk or a hike with? And I think we need to look at the type of people's interests. What type of people do we want? What interests do we want them to have as friends? And then we choose the passion, not the people. So
right.
we go after them wherever they are and start making friends in that environment. And it works out much easier that way. Yesterday, I was at a wonderful, wonderful gathering of women who were artists and performers and poets. And it was so exciting because everybody did a little performance except those of us who didn't. Because a friend was launching a new book that was hand-painted and with a poem in it. It was just glorious. But mm-hmm. all these women had met each other through joining places where what their passion was took place.
Mm-hmm.
The writer's circles, art classes, that sort of thing. That was for them. But if you're into cooking or you're into hiking or you're into winemaking or whatever, go there. That's where you meet like-minded people that have the same passion that you do. Or even there are gatherings for people who go to movies, a theater.
Oh.
That's
uh-huh.
the place to go, yeah.
And you also mentioned there that volunteering is a great place
Huge.
To make new friends.
Huge, because you're both there for the same reason. You're both
right.
there because you want to help, because you're kind, because you want to do something beyond yourself for other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to build relationships.
Yeah, and then so many people say, well, I don't have time for that. That's not true, is it?
Well, we make time for what we want to make time for.
Right. Right.
I mean, it really is that simple. You know, I mean, if you've got three young teenage kids that you're driving to hockey and baseball and all that, then I can sort of kind of understand it. But even so, some people make time for themselves through meditation or whatever, and other people don't. We make right. time for what we need to make time for.
Yeah, a great point. How do we keep a friendship healthy? It has to be cultivated. It's like a seedling. It
yes.
has to grow. But what are some of the best ways to keep a friendship healthy?
Talking, laughing. Laughing's a big one. Making sure that you check in. Don't wait for the other person to check in all the time.
Right.
Make sure that you don't bring only angst to this gathering, so it's only not complaining,
because mm-hmm.
that gets tedious after a while. But again, work on the values. And the two of you, if you have the same interests, say, you know, how can we make this richer, wilder, more fun? Go away for a weekend together, if you can.
Mm-hmm.
But do things. Just talking or texting doesn't keep a relationship close. You have to do things together.
Right.
It's
yeah.
my belief system.
I absolutely agree with you, and I am guilty of getting caught up in all the other things of life and failing to say, oh, God, I was thinking about you when I'm thinking about them. So I think that's something that we all need to do more is just sort of remind ourselves these people are important in our lives and step in and tell them that every now and then. That's a big deal.
No question. No question. And even if they are busy, too, it's nice to know that someone's thinking of you.
Yeah.
You know, I have two or three friends that spend a lot of time on the road traveling through business. Mm-hmm. One has an art gallery. Another one is a corporate facilitator, and she's all over the world. And sometimes they'll just send a text or an email saying, saw this and thought of you. That's love. That's just terrific.
Yeah, that's great. You just know they're there.
They know they're there.
Yeah, very, very important.
It is.
Another thing that I just think we have to touch on, because I've talked to some friends about this, and it's their relationships with people that you call the unloved ones, people in their lives they just can't stand.
I
think it's important that we kind of discuss that, because every now and then you've got them and you got to deal with them. So what do we do with that?
Yeah, well, we all have unloved ones. I think, you know, the most often it happens is when you have a close friend and they have a partner or a lover. You know, you hear this a lot, love him, hate her, or vice versa.
Right.
And, or we have someone in the family who is a real nudge, someone who is always finding complaint with you. Oh, haven't you put on a little weight, dear? Or someone who, you know, someone who's always finding something wrong, and you always like hold back from seeing them. Or Uncle Charlie, back hip to him again, who gets drunk at all weddings and funerals and parties. The most important thing to do for yourself is to become aware that we are all human beings and everybody has the same needs. And those needs are to be recognized, to be honored, and to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start working and looking at Uncle Charlie from your values and knowing that he needs to be respected, he needs to be acknowledged, it's key. And if you start talking to him, letting go of that old snapshot and going in as someone brand new, never met him before, then you can not let him attach. He won't Velcro onto you. You just treat him with civility, kindness, because those are your values, and it'll make life a lot easier.
Right. Right. And something else in here, we all know what SWAC is, but you have a SWOT with an O, not an A.
Yes, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and I forgot what the T is for.
Threats,
yes. Funny how I forget threats.
When you set them aside, you haven't them anymore, so it's not necessary. Now, this is in the business section of the book, but in reading it again, I found it played into everything.
Yeah. Well, again, we take ourselves everywhere we go. the strengths that we have. When people come into the clinic, for instance, they say, you know, I'm an addict. I need to get rid of my addiction to whatever it is. And I say to them, are you in treatment of any sort? Because I will only work with you if you're in treatment, but I can certainly help you apart from that. And then they say, well, yes. If they say no, I can't help. But they say yes. I say, well, that's good news. I'm glad you're an addict. Because if you're an addict, we can change that to something that's good for you.
Right.
It just means you have focused attention on something else. So what would you like it to be?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's exercise, maybe it's reading, maybe it's running, maybe it's making new friends. But we can change that. We can change that focus, that intense focus of addiction, into something more beneficial.
Georgina, what's the most important relationship we have?
Ourselves. Without ourselves, we have nothing.
Right.
Without ourselves, we have no interaction with the world. Without ourselves, really knowing who we are and how we are inside our skin, the good, the bad, the ugly, and acknowledging it all and respecting it all, then we have no relationship with nature, with animals, with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have no, there's no there there. We're hollow.
Right.
I believe that unless you really, really know the dark side of yourself and the glorious side of yourself, how can you know anyone else? How can you know anything else?
Yeah.
It's the most exciting journey to take, is the one to know yourself. And
that
I say
it
the good
is.
And the bad. I think it's important to celebrate both.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. Rather than just jumping in, I got to change what's wrong, go to celebrate what's wrong.
I don't think we change it. I think we redirect it, maybe. I think, you know, recalculate, as they say in the GPS. I know that I can be mean, but I choose not to. But if you don't know who you are and how you are, then it happens. You
right.
don't acknowledge it. You just think, oh, well, that's who I am, instead of acknowledging it and being able to choose something else. If somebody knows that they're inclined toward anger, for instance, but they also know they have kindness because that's part of who they are, or they, whatever. Just know that, and then you can either do something about it or acknowledge it and choose not to use it. And I believe that every morning we choose the pieces we're going to use every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes us who we are. We're everything. So
yeah.
we need to acknowledge it. That's the most important thing. And once you get that, Britt, you then realize that everybody has everything. So even
yes.
Uncle Charlie is kind of. Right?
Poor Charlie.
Poor Charlie, yeah. Sorry, Uncle Charlie. Yeah,
yeah,
but everybody has everything.
This is really true. We do. And it's our acknowledgement that we all have everything and what
mm-hmm.
we choose to do with it, which is so, I mean, that's up to us. That's not up to anybody else.
No. And once you've got that, then you can start making the relationship.
Yeah.
First with yourself, because then you really know what you want and need in a relationship. And most importantly, what you're prepared to give into that relationship.
Right. Towards the end where you have the agenda and the worksheets and everything, you have a question in there that I think we should all ask ourselves on a daily basis. What did I do today that seemed to improve the relationship? And it doesn't
right.
matter what relationship it is.
Right, right. What
because
did I do today?
Yeah.
What did I do today to improve? Or what am I going to do today?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's key, and it changes everything. It makes life so easy. I can't tell you. So much easier.
Well, it takes away the concept of being a victim of
yes.
anything, because you're
yes.
empowering yourself.
Yes, yes. And understanding why some relationships work and some don't. And the
right.
ones that need to work, like, you know, you need to have them work, like at the office or in business or with a professional, then you know what to do to make it work for
right.
that period of time.
Yeah, it is huge. Georgina,
it is
you've
huge.
Got another incredible book.
Thank you.
It is really wonderful. It's available in December, right?
Yes, it's available for advance order online right now at Amazon.
And Barnes & Noble?
Be available at Barnes & Noble, yes, thank
right.
you.
Right.
And it will be in stores in December, yeah.
And I've got to tell you, I just think this is something we can all grow from just exponentially by understanding first self and then how self interacts with others to create that third circle. That's
mm-hmm.
huge.
Mm-hmm.
It is so important.
And you can't unknow that.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't pretend yeah. not to know it. This is the interesting thing.
Well, it's true. And when people, you know, see someone together and then see someone separate, they'll say, oh, you're a totally different person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a surprise. But if you start by being honest with self, Mm-hmm. You are going to be authentic all the way through everything.
Totally.
Excellent. Totally. Thank you, Georgina. I appreciate this so much. Everyone, the
Third Circle Protocol,
definitely go get it. It's an eye-opener, and it will make you think about things you may not want to think about, but it'll put things into a healthy track for you and for the people around you. Thanks, Georgina. Have a great evening.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, tonight, as you do your meditations and as you get centered for the health program of wellness, ask yourself this question. What did I do today that seemed to improve my relationships? And go through each one individually and make the determination that if you know who you are, you can improve all of the relationships around you. Thank you and good night.